The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. And here's round one, which tries to test their vocabulary. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words reasonably right. And Nancy Spain begins. Nancy, what is a mattoid? M-A-T-T-O-I-D.
A mattoid?
What is a mattoid, Nancy?
Well, a mattoid is a mad person, Jack.
Yes, reasonably right.
A mad person be reasonably right.
Yes, I was trying to get those somebody who's unreasonably right. You see, I think I
thought it was an adjective anyway.
It is.
You're mattoid.
Yes, you're mattoid.
Not a mattoid.
You could be.
You know what, Jack? You haven't done your homework.
It's an adjectival noun, Nancy.
Oh, a vulgar conjunction.
That's quite different. You don't learn that until several lessons later. Person of erratic mind, a mixture between a genius and a fool. That's what I was trying to get. I'll give you your marks too. Frank Miller, what is an oleander?
An oleander?
Mm-hmm.
Is it one of those rather exclusive sporting clubs?
It isn't something that grows in a plastic boat, no.
Isengari and oleander.
Lovely thought.
It's what Hero shouted when he started to swim the Hellespont.
Or when he sank opposite her, I thought.
Oleander, it's is it like bougainvillea?
Yes. Well, not terribly, but reasonably.
Well, it's a plant, not
yes.
Terribly like bougainvillea. It's a Mediterranean
yes.
Plant.
Yes. What kind of flowers?
I gazed out the window and there was the oleander and the azure sky. What kind of flowers?
Yes.
Oh, pretty. Very pretty.
I believe your partner could help you on this one.
Pink and white, dear. Yes.
All right, you get your 2 marks. It's evergreen, poisonous, levantine shrub with leathery leaves and red and white flowers. And if you put them together, I suppose you get the pink and dry. It is, Frau. What is a bogle? B-O-G-L-E.
A bogle. A bogle. It's a thing which sort of haunts, I think, isn't it? It's a kind of... A bogle.
A thing that goes bump in the night.
Yes. It's I'm sure Burns had a lot of bogles.
Yes.
He must have had some bogles.
Yes, but I haven't had it defined yet.
A bogle. Well, it's a kind of spirit.
Well, that's
not whiskey. I mean, not that kind of spirit. It's a kind of alarming spirit.
Yes, that's good enough. Goblin, bogeyman, scarecrow. Teddy bogle, I think, was the thing where you hollowed out a turnip and put a candle inside and put slits for eyes and mouth. And frightened off your grandmother.
Halloween apostrophe in night.
Exactly that. Dennis Norton, what is a babouche? B-A-B-O-U-C-H-E, babouche.
Is this something to do with babushka?
it's sort of east of the right line, as you might say, yes. But it doesn't help otherwise. At least I don't think so. I don't know what babushka means.
Well, babushka comes in Russian plays, Jack, and it's either... You either wear it, play it, or marry it. I never...
Well, turn a tap on and tea comes out.
Yes, or turn a tap on and tea comes out. I don't know. They say
try wearing this one.
Wearing it, yes. They say, babushka, you will be little mother of all the Russians. I tell you what I'll do... I tell you what I'll do with you, Jack. I'll take
there.
3/4 of... I'll tell you what, I'll take 0.83 of a mark.
You won't yet.
And you move into the next street, eh?
No, I think not.
Well, it's Middle Eastern, and
yes.
It's a garment.
Worn by a droshky.
Dillis has taken her shoe off.
Shoe off, yes.
Now then,
They're shoes.
Well, it's something you run barefoot through, yes.
Like autumn leaves.
Yes.
Yeah. I think a half mark would be generous. It's an oriental slipper.
Oh.
Well, before we start round two, I'm going to give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the two women members of the team to study their quotations. And at the end of the program, I ask them where those quotations come from. And Nancy Spain with Dennis Norden, your quotation is "The Shape of Things to Come." And Dennis Powell with Frank Muir, yours is "Anything Awful Makes Me Laugh." And then at the end of the program, I ask Dennis and Frank to give me their idea of how these words came to be said or written. And I don't want any of these answers now. Well, the next round is the who and what department. Two marks if you get it right. Nancy Spain first. Byron in Don Juan wrote the following lines: "Poor fellow, his was an untoward fate. 'Tis strange the mind, that very fiery particle, should let itself be snuffed out by an article."
Oh, an article.
Yes.
Oh, Keats, presumably.
Yes, quite right. Well,
I see.
Why?
Why? Well, somebody wrote about him in the Edinburgh Review.
Yes.
He said, "Go back to your whatever not pills."
Drugstore.
Drugstore. Yes.
Two marks. Well done, Nancy. Byron was writing about John Keats, whose last years were made very depressing for him because Blackwood's Magazine and the Quarterly, particularly the latter, made savage and bitter criticism of his works, particularly the poem Endymion. And Byron also wrote, "Who killed John Keats? I said the Quarterly, so savage and tartly, 'twas one of my feats." Well done, Nancy. Frank Muir, "The last great Englishman is low."
We presume it isn't David Lowe, the cartoonist.
No, that's
New Zealander.
New Zealander. Well, last great Britisher. Last great. Why is he Lowe?
Tennyson.
Wouldn't be Tennyson. He would never.
Yes.
Wellington.
Yes. Yeah. You're
yes,
getting there.
Yes.
You're absolutely dead right.
Tennyson or Wellington? It was Wellington writing about Tennyson. Or vice versa.
If you'll stick to the vice versa, I'll give you your two marks.
I try to.
It's Tennyson, who wrote, "The last great Englishman is Lowe, foremost captain of his time, rich in saving common sense, and as the greatest only are in his simplicity sublime."
I bet he wrote that when he was poet Lowe, yeah.
Well done. For both of you. Dillis Powell, this is yours. "The poet Walt Whitman wrote a poem beginning, 'O captain and my captain, our fearful trip is done.' I'd like to know in whose honour he wrote that poem."
I'll tell you, Jack. Abraham Lincoln.
Absolutely right. And if I remember rightly, it ends very pathetically, "But I, with mournful tread, walk the deck where my captain lies, fallen cold and dead." Dennis Norden. Robert Browning wrote a poem called "The Lost Leader," which began, "Just for a handful of silver he left us, just for a ribbon to stick in his coat." Who is he talking about?
Well, us were poets, because he says that Shakespeare was with us and Milton was for us.
Yes.
And it was a poet of that time. Was it Wordsworth?
Quite right. Do you remember why? What he'd done
wrong?
Well,
wait a minute. Just for obviously had got some kind of reward.
Yes.
Laureate? Was he made for...
Yes, laureate. Right. Well done, Dennis. It's Browning writing about Wordsworth, and he was absolutely fed up because he'd accepted the office of poet laureate, and he thought that stopped him being a proper poet. And the next round is about the origin and derivation of familiar phrases. These are phrases more or less in common use. I want to know what they mean and how they originated. Nancy Spain, "From Alpha to Omega."
Well, it is the beginning and end of the Greek alphabet.
Quite right.
Jack. And what it means is that you run the gamut of the emotions from A to Z.
Yes.
Or, you know.
Putting it into the original Greek.
Yes. Now what have I got to do?
That's fair enough, I think.
Well, that's enough.
I can get two marks for that.
Oh, good.
They're the first and last letters of the Greek alphabet, A to Z. And in the Book of Revelations, you get "I am Alpha and Omega, the first and the last." Frank Muir, the phrase "to hold aloof."
Hold aloof. To show you're well bred. Hissing. Hold aloof means to take one step sideways and incline the nose or knees about 9 degrees in northerly direction.
That's a good enough definition. Now, why does it? What's it start from? How does it become there?
Detach yourself from the hoi polwa. Hold yourself aloof.
It's very much our own favourite sport.
Something
to do with laughing.
Yes, exactly that. I suppose the Queen Elizabeth is sort of bearing down on you.
Yes, well, you put a life belt on and jump over. Well, you pass port to port, and you turn to starboard.
And what are you trying to do?
You try to make sure that the Queen Elizabeth has seen you.
This is all terribly interesting and not utterly irrelevant. I'm going to give you 1.5 marks. It is to be standoffish, to keep away from people in a rather snobbish way, but it means to bear to the windward or to luff. And you can't, I think, keep to windward except by keeping up the head of the ship away from whatever it is you're trying to avoid, in this case, another ship. Well, and so it means you are being snooty about the other ship and hence holding aloof. All right, dearest pal, what is or was a printer's devil and why so called?
I should think it was somebody who ran about with a print.
Yes.
Little boy who ran about with bits of print.
Yes, and why was he called printer's devil?
Because he had the devil for the printer.
That's an ingenious explanation. I don't think it's the whole
right
one.
Not right.
I mean, which kind of bit of the printing industry did he appear in?
Typesetting.
Yes, that's fair enough. I want to know what office it was.
What office?
Mm.
We're in a printer's office. I haven't gotten any further than that.
All right, I think that's good enough. It was newspapers mainly, you see. He was a printer's messenger boy.
Oh, man, I assume he was a printer's newspaper.
Point was that, particularly in the older method of printing, he took the sheets from the press and ran off with them to wherever they were wanted, and they were very wet with black ink. And so he became also very wet and very black, and was called a printer's devil. And they spoke of him, I think, at the beginning of last century. They do commonly so black and... No, it must be earlier than that, 17th century, I think. They do commonly so black and bedaub themselves that the workmen do jocosely call them devils. That's what I was trying to get at.
Ah.
2 marks.
I always thought devils was red.
It's the other side of the infernal blanket. Dennis Norden. Knock, knock. Who's there?
Yes, that was just a game. Knock, knock, who's there? And you said, oh, Lord, I can't remember
Sonia.
Any of them now.
Sonia.
No, I know. Knock, knock. Yes, Sonia Room. Knock, knock, who's there? Sam and Janet. You say Sam and Janet who? Say Sam and Janet who? Come on.
Sam and Janet who?
Sam and Janet evening.
Yes, yes.
The origin of it.
The first time the phrase occurs, as far as I know.
First time it occurs?
As far as I know.
Nancy says Macbeth.
Yes.
Yes.
The porter.
The porter, yes, that's right. The porter in Macbeth.
Well done, you get 2 marks. It was a popular game of the kind that Dennis describes. But the porter has a nice little scene of his own in the middle of Macbeth after the murder of Duncan, and when the light, as it were, is let in on the play. Here's a knocking indeed. If a man were porter of Hell Gate, he should have old turning the key. Knock, knock, knock. Who's there in the name of Beelzebub? And he goes on doing this for the entire scene. As far as I know, it's the first time the phrase was used in that way. Well, now we come to the last round and go back to the quotations I gave the two teams earlier on in the programme. Nancy Spain, the origin of your quotation, The Shape of Things to Come.
Well, it's a book title by H.G. Wells.
Yes. What sort of book was it?
It was about the future.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm not... I think that is so easy. I don't think I'm going to give any marks for this part.
Oh, no, look.
All right. I suspect, Nancy, that this Shape of Things to Come, it was not an original title invented by H.G. Wells. I think it may be somewhere in Shakespeare, but probably somebody will write in and tell me. I so far haven't been able to discover it, nor has Ted Mason who wrote the script. Now, dear Spau, the origin of yours, which was, anything awful makes me laugh.
That's somebody talking about weddings and funerals.
Yes.
And I think it's Charles Lamb.
Well done, it is. It's a letter he wrote to Robert Southey. I was at Hazlitt's marriage and had liked to have been turned out several times during the ceremony. Anything awful makes me laugh. I misbehaved once at a funeral. Charles Lamb.
Sick.
And now I ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanation of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation gets the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the studio. So back to Dennis Norden, and his quotation was, "The shape of things to come."
Forget H.G. Wells. George Treadgold and his wife Rita were sitting at home one Friday evening when Rita suddenly looked up and she said, "George." "Yes, my dove," he said. "George," she said, "I think I'm being communicated with." And he said, "Nonsense. It might just be a lump in the armchair." And she said, "No, no," she said, "I have a feeling as though there is a tiny voice inside my mind trying to give me a message. Do me a favour. Look out of the window that gives on to the garden." So he looked out of the window that gave on to the garden, and there, believe it or not, and it would help me considerably if you did believe it, were three Martians. And he turned to Rita and he said, "There are Martians at the bottom of our garden." And she said, "Well, I never." Which was more or less the truth. And she said, "How do you know that they are Martians?" And he said, "Because they resemble nothing on Earth." He said, they look something like, he said, "Have you seen, you remember those puffball things that grow in meadows, those little puffballs of thistle down?" He said, "They look like that, except they're 6 foot high with little conical metal caps on top." And she said, "Do you mean caps that have written on them, 'Chase me, Charlie, I'm the last bus home'?" And he said, "No, my heart's ease." He said, "Not comical caps, conical caps. The shape of an inverted ice cream cornet." He said, "They are Martians because they are standing by what is obviously a space rocket with neutron drive, anti-gravitational field, disc brakes, and stickers on the rear window reading Venus, Arcturus, and so on." And she said, "Well, what are they doing in our garden?" And he said, "Well, they've had a very long journey. Probably they've got out to stretch their tendrils." And she said, "Well," and she said, "Just a moment, I've got the message. They are saying, 'Take me to your leader.'" She said, "What shall I communicate back?" He said, "Well, communicate back that we haven't got a leader. This is a democracy and everyone is a leader." So she communicated this And he said, what was their response? And she said, they said, we've never had this trouble on any other planet. And George got suddenly angry. He said, I won't be talked to like that by a puffball. And he opened the window and shouted out, go on, hop it. Go and play in some other garden. And Rita said to him, George, aren't we being a little inhospitable? I'm sure they didn't mean to be offensive. They're just shy. And he said, happen you're right, look. And he turned back startled, and he said, they've gone. Look up in the sky, and up in the sky was this streak of light making back to the blackness of outer space. The Martians had come and gone, and Rita said, you see what happened? They were shy, and when you talk to them like that, they took offense. They took umbrage. And whatever H.G. Wells tells you, that is the truth of what happened when the Martians came. They took umbrage. The shy puff things took umbrage.
Well, that's the best unwritten bit of science fiction I've read for a long time. And we go back to Frank Muir. And if you remember, his quotation was, anything awful makes me laugh.
I have a theory, you know, you talk about chaps, you know, being worried because it's the latter part of the 20th century, but I reckon as long as you've got a bottle of gin, good friends and healthy prejudices, a man should stand foursquare. Don't you understand? One of my prejudices is about food, you know. Food, there's odd things about food. I mean, one looks forward so much, for instance, to breakfast in bed at a hotel. If you get breakfast in bed at a hotel, you can't eat the thing. I mean, you order fried egg, you know, toast and marmalade, quite simple. You know, a fried egg, to be a fried egg, has got to have a sort of brown frilly petticoat around the edge. Hotels don't do this. It's a sort of hygienic fried egg. The white is all white. It hasn't got this sort of brown toffee bit around the edge. And consequently, you get your fork into the white and you cut a bit off, and it's the most slithery substance on earth. There is no known way of conveying a forkful of fried hotel white of egg to your mouth lying in bed without slopping it down your pyjamas. You get to, the only possible way actually is to effect a sort of bridge with the morning paper. But boiled eggs. I mean, if you have boiled eggs, the same sort of troubles happen to me anyway. I mean, do you bash it on its skull? I mean, do you stove its skull in? In which case, you've got the business of picking the hot shell bits off, which hurts the end of the fingers. And when you've done that, you're faced with this curious membrane which you've got to pierce with a spoon. And if you push too hard, you get a thumb full of yolk. I tell you another odd thing about food is that if you get a fried plate, the waiter brings it, and it overlaps the plate, you know, the feet or the tail of the fish over one end of the plate, and the head with that terrible sort of reproachful eye is extended over the other, and the waiter says, would you like me to take it off the bone for you? And you say, it's very kind. And he turns his back to you and makes sort of scurrying motions with a spoon and fork. And he returns with two tiny slivers of fish. How does he manage to sort of shrink the whole thing? The other thing is, why can't people develop, why can't scientists in this day and age develop a sort of filter for removing toenails from stewed apple? It is rather odd, but I've been going into this. Matter of fact, I've taken to the kitchen, and I've discovered a recipe which any chap can make, and it's really quite easy. You take a handful of breadcrumbs, a handful of cornflakes, or similar sort of breakfast cereal, then go into the larder and ignore that sort of jar of grease, which rather looks like a grey white cliffs of Dover with a brown sea. because that's dripping, and you don't want that. But try and find any old kidneys or liver or sausages, and bash all these up into little bits with the secateurs. the pinking shears are terribly good. Cut it all up into small pieces, rub it all together, and try and knead it into a mass. Do this with pouring on some salad cream and some tomato sauce and some Worcester sauce. Then get a needle, a fairly thick needle, about a number 8, and get the salt cellar, and with the needle open up the hole in the salt cellar, which is blocked. Then pour some salt onto this, press it between the palms of your hand, which saves dirtying a dish. Put it on a piece of bread and just shove the whole thing under the griller until it hisses and spits at you. And that is absolutely lovely. It's sort of savoury and it's pleasant. It's what they call in the Mediterranean countries a pilaf. But I invented it. It was invented wholly by me, and I call it a milaf. So it's quite simple to make. Do remember the recipe. And you don't need any special meats. Any old leftovers will do. In fact, I'm going to use a bit of lamb now, just for the last line. But if you want to make me laugh, just use anything. Anything awful makes me laugh.
Public Sanitary Authority closes down that kitchen very shortly, but by your applause, I think Frank Miller just wins on that story. And that leads us to a final score in which Nancy Spain and Dennis Norden win by 3 marks from Dillis Power and Frank Muir, and that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Nancy Spain, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longman. The program was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC. Oh,